Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program at the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Dr. David Okola, and I'm the chairperson for the Personal Growth Forum and your moderator for today's event. We also welcome our radio listeners, and we invite our audience to visit us at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our distinguished speaker. Dum da da dum dum dum. The stories you're about to hear are true. The names were not changed. What's innocence? I'm going to tell you like it is. Karen Walker Tanoa talks a lot. It's no wonder she's a professional speaker who has been awarded nationally for her presentation skills. With 21 years of success in sales and finance industry, the awards for production as a certified facilitator and trainer comes as no surprise. The awards were probably the only way to keep her quiet. What is a surprise is these accomplishments came after she was paralyzed, single parent of three. As an authority on resilience and the owner of KWT Communications, Karen consults with professionals by helping them reset their businesses for optimal performance during times of growth and change. She is the immediate past president of the National Speakers Association, Northern California, a graduate and program director of the Elite Pro Track Speaking Program, and an ambassador for the Power to End Stroke and Go Red for Women campaigns hosted by the American Heart Association. She serves her community by taking active roles in various projects from feeding the hungry to being master of ceremonies at fundraising events. As shown in a promotional video, she is also a dedicated student in the martial art of discipline of Tang Soo Do. Karen has interviewed a number of women with exceptional journeys. Today, as a part of the Accent of Women series, she'll share their stories along with her own personal experience in Beyond Resilience, the confidence factor. Maybe talking a lot does have its advantages. Here, from the paralysis to the platform, is Karen Walker Tanoa.
Can you stretch your green back so thin that you can't see? That's what some suggest. Is that not the best with the state of the economy? Your drive, you're the drive of your industry, business, and family, meaning there's nothing you can't do. That's why resilience and confidence factor. It would be nice, since you write your own song, to remember the words. Wouldn't that be good? Let's try this again, okay? That's why resilience, the confidence factor, is the way. We can't stop you, 'cause resilience has power. That's P-O-W-E-R. With it, you'll go far. Your resilience has power. That's P-O-W-E-R. Let me tell you, 'cause rather women are strategizing with new ways to make ends meet, or if they are influencing the culture of a nation. Women are amazing. They know how to find strength in weaknesses, opportunities in a crisis, and even joy and happiness in the depth of sorrow and pain. Now, I know some of you may be thinking, if these women are doing all of this, they must have a secret. And you're right. Now, I know this is early in our relationship, but I kind of like you. So can I consider you friends? Is this a safe place? We're at the Commonwealth Club. We know this is the place to meet. But is it a place for friends, too? And it's okay if you talk to me. They don't mind. Yes. Thank you. Then I would like to share it with you. Because these women have found that resilience has power. They have learned that there are tools, because resilience has traits. They use it as a tool. They strengthen it. And because of this, they are able to succeed in the face of adversity. They continue to move forward. Now, David told you I talk a lot. I don't believe that. I think he was just kidding. But I tell you that in my journey with resilience, I never even thought about it. Until one day, actually September 2nd, 1995, I found myself with my backside flat on a gurney, bright overhead lights shining in my eyes. But I was giving a gift, jewelry. Okay, maybe it wasn't jewelry. I had an ID band with my name on it. So I guess you know that that means that I wasn't a visitor. I was a patient. But the incident happened actually the night before. I have three boys, Philip, Michael, and Maurice. At the time, they were 4, 8, and 12. They had a few friends over, and they were playing video games. Brand new game, wanted to see if they could get to the highest level in one night. Well, I figured while they were out playing the game, then I could really start exercising, take my program to a new level, to boldly go where no man has gone before. So while I'm in my room, I'm doing stretches. And I thought, well, you know, this, I do this all the time. Maybe I should go a little further, go a little deeper. And as I turned my neck, I heard this little popping sound. Yeah, not good. Instantly, I was dizzy. I completely fell to the ground because the room was spinning, and the ground was the only thing not moving. I decided that, okay, no more exercising. I'm done for the night. But of course, while I'm down on the floor, the strangest things start happening. I had to go to the bathroom. Now I'm thinking, okay, I have the strength to do one thing. Do I go to the restroom or do I go to the bed and lay down for a while? Only one thing. Well, then I'm a mother of three. I've got kids in my living room. So I'm thinking, okay, if something happened, do I really want the kids to find me in the restroom? I mean, what if I kind of knock my head on something? That's not a pretty sight. So I opted to go lay down. I thought it would just be for a few moments. I didn't wake up till the next morning. But when I did, it's like, hey, I feel pretty good. This is great. Well, then I noticed a little tingle in my right calf. But I figured that was just because I had slept so long. You know, I went to bed early. So I probably just need to move around a little bit, get the circulation going. Now, this is really something. We have all these nurses in the audience, and they're just shaking their head like, oh, girl, why'd you do that? I didn't know. Because I didn't believe that I fit into any category of having a serious problem. You have to think about it. I was 33 years old, which I considered to be young, pretty active. I didn't smoke. It's like, come on, I couldn't be having a health problem. So my mind didn't even go that way. I just turned over. Well, then I started noticing a little chill. And this coldness started going up the right side of my leg. All the way up. Next thing I know, I'm thinking, okay, the laying down, turning over is not working. I have to just get up. Well, at the same time I'm trying to get up, the coldness starts going up the back side of my body. So I'm trying to get out of the bed. The coldness is moving up. I'm trying to stand up, and I can't. I completely fall to the ground. It's like, okay, I need some help. But you have to keep in mind, so not only did I not think that I had a health issue initially, you have to start bringing into your culture and how your mind thinks, things that you were brought up and how you were raised. And I don't know about any of you, but I was taught that you don't call for an ambulance. Now, I don't know if my family thought that the bill would kill me or something, but that was the rule. But I decided that since I couldn't control this coldness and my leg wasn't moving, that maybe I ought to make the phone call since I paid the bills anyway. So I called the operator. Cute little perky chick answered the phone. And you'll understand this description because she says, "Emergency 911." And you think I'm perky. That's perky. So I explained to her that I was having, you know, all the symptoms that I was having, things that I was going through. And she says, "Oh, honey, can you go get one of your parents? Go get one of my parents. I am the parent." That's when the light bulb came on. And you remember what they said in the movie. "Houston, we have a problem." Because it finally clicked. In my mind, I was speaking very clear. But on the other end, I could not be understood. I was having a bad day. By now, the coldness not only is going up my back, it's reached the back of my head, and instead of coming up both sides, it stopped when it got to my neck, went right up the back, and then straight down the front of my face. I mean, inch. I could feel it moving. Since I couldn't get help with the emergency service, I wanted to get my kids to help. Maybe they could call. The only thing is that from the bed to the door is a long way if you can't walk. So let's put this into perspective. Not only can I not walk, I can't move my arm. I can't move any side of my body. So we are talking about dragging my entire body weight the length of the room in order to make it to the door. Now, I did, crazy me, I stuck the phone under my arm like this so I could do the dragging part. And I'm glad I did, because when I knocked on the door, no one could hear me. The kids were at the front part of the house in the living room. I'm in the back bedroom. Nobody can hear me. Talking about panic. It's like when you realize you need help and then realize you can't get it. Okay, yeah, I freaked out. I take the phone, and I start banging on the door. I hear my kids coming down the hallway. So I'm thinking, yes, they can rescue me. Well, guess what? Now I'm in front of the door, and they can't get in. My body is blocking the door. You guys, it was one thing after the other. I finally managed to scoot back. So my eldest son, Phil, he came in, saw that, in my child's terms, mom's all jacked up. because I couldn't move, and when I tried to speak, he couldn't understand me. So since he couldn't understand me, he just called 911 and said, "Mom needs help," and gave him the address. After he called them, he called my sister and said, "We have a bunch of kids here. Can you come over and help us?" To this day, I consider Phil as being my hero because he saved me. And not only did he take care of me, he took care of every other kid that was in that house and made sure that they were all right. Because we all know, and I'm sure some of you are parents, me laying down that night knowing I wasn't feeling good, having a room full of kids, I am so glad nobody reported me to CPS. I go to the hospital. It took 3 days for them to figure out what happened. Because my symptoms were so sporadic, it's like, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. At one time, they actually thought that I had multiple sclerosis. Finally, a neurologist comes in, and he says, "Karen, what has happened is that you have a blood vessel disorder. An artery at the base of my brain dissected, and I had a hemorrhagic stroke. And that is what caused the paralysis to the entire right side of my body. Now, although I did regain movement and feeling in the right side within a week or so, something had to be destroyed because I had to relearn how to use my hands, my legs. I like to eat, and guess what? I couldn't hold a fork. It's like, what's up with that? We're talking all over from the beginning. It was definitely a challenge. But I had a whole lot of time on my hands. And that's when I started doing research on resilience. Because I figured I am not the only person who has been in a situation where I think I'm all great, have my little invisible superhero cape on. I can do anything, go anywhere, solve any problem. And then life calls up and says, "Hey, babe, yeah, I know you have plans today, but I need you to come over here." Life was telling me to stop. I had to figure out a way to get through it. So through the research in resilience, that's how I learned to do that. And so we're going to share some of the traits that I found. Because through research and interviews with people, I have found that there are 7 traits that are common between everyone that has had to face some type of adversity and who has succeeded through it. And what is so amazing is that those traits reside in each and every one of us. The 7 traits are courage, creativity, initiative, focus, insight, humility, and tenacity. Also, what the research shows is when you use the traits together, that's when you can get beyond resilience. Because most people think of resilience as just simply having the ability to bounce back. But I tell you, you use the traits, you're doing more than bouncing back. It reminds me of when David called and says, "Karen, can you come to the Commonwealth Club and speak to us through our Ascent of Woman series?" It gave me another opportunity to really focus in on the relationship between resilience and women. And I'll tell you, something amazing happened. It's because I'm finding out is that a lot had to do with the self-esteem of women. in society, there were so many different mindsets that were being put out, different frames of mind that actually had a lot to do with how people were reacting. To give you an example, I interviewed a woman named Vicky Nguyen. Her grandmother was a picture bride. Her grandfather was working here. He's a Japanese man working here in the United States. Wanted a bride from Japan. Her picture was given to him, and he selected her. That is how she came to this country. So her frame of mind was, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Did she have any thoughts of her own? Probably. Were they ever acted upon? Not even close. They have children. Two girls, two boys. The father shows up at the hospital when the boys are born. Takes them 3 days to come to the hospital to visit. When the girls are born. So you're kind of getting an idea of how different mindsets are. She has children. They grow up. Now, Vicky's mother was the first in her family to actually be born in the United States. So her frame of mind was, wow, you know, all these opportunities and education available. She went, yes, she went to school, she learned many things, spoke to a lot of people, and yes, what did she do? The same things her mother taught her to do. What society said was the right thing for her to do. You get married, you have babies. Any opinion you think you have, you keep to yourself. That was the mindset that she had. So now she gets married. Her husband, the Vietnam War happened during this time after they had gotten married. And because he was Japanese, he was kept in a camp for 2 years. The only thing that they will talk about is how when he left, his hair was black. 2 years after being in the camp, his hair was white. The family will not discuss anything that happened in the camp. But because they want to hold Vicky so close, all of the children, when she was growing up, they didn't even want her to go to college because she didn't want to go down the street. She wanted to go, you know, to another state for college. No, they didn't want her out of her sight. They actually tried to bribe her with a brand new car. Here, we'll give you this car if you don't go away to college. Vicky left the car offer on the table, went to Princeton. One of the very first women in her class. Yes. So the mindsets between her grandparent, her grandmother, and her mother, and now her, they have changed over time, and it's because of how they were developing their self-esteem. And I'll tell you, they kept self-esteem in the back pocket. They never considered resiliency at all, never considered any traits. But I'll tell you, Vicky started. Because with creativity, she started finding new ways that she could do things. She started thinking out of the box. She didn't think that education was only down the street. She saw a broad way to go. Other opportunities. Also, with her focus and humility, she had learned so many different things. She wanted to share that with others and felt that she could do that if she would broaden her horizon and step out of the neighborhood. Actually go to where other people are, outside of the family, talk to strangers. But you know, it's one thing to talk about resilience and mention the seven traits, but it's another thing to actually experience it. And I think that with the interaction, maybe if you can see it on stage, it'll help you understand what I'm saying a little clearer. With resilience, I had mentioned the seven traits. Courage is the most, I won't say it's that it's the most important, but it is one that you will find in all seven traits. It supports them. And the reason why is because it has so many different layers. The outside is courage, but it's almost like an onion. You have to peel back the layers and get to the seed right in the middle. That's where it develops. And in the middle, that's where you're going to find hope and desire. Is there a couple of people here that could represent hope and desire for me up here on stage? Lynn and Candy, you want to come over here? Because this is going to be an evolution. Thank you. Now, we're going to need someone that can represent courage. Now, let me explain the courage. Courage is when you can stand up straight. When you walk, you have confidence. You're sure of yourself. And I'll tell you, every now and then we need this. And sometimes, you know, my emotions go up and down. I'll tell you what I've done to help myself so I could be courageous on a regular basis. You know, because sometimes it fluctuates during the day. When I was working, I got a customized license plate that said unstoppable. Because to me, unstoppable was more than a word. It was an attitude. Can you really say unstoppable, unstoppable, slouched over, walking like this, unsure of yourself, kind of quivering? I don't think so. Just didn't work. But when you say unstoppable, oh, yes, that deep breath comes in. You can stand and walk straight. You're sure of yourself. And when you're unstoppable, doggone it, you are courageous. So who can represent courage here for me today? Laura. Thank you. Now, as courage, you're right here. This is my courage. Woo! I love that. Now, hope and desire. Courage is your goal. That's where we want to go to. Now, we're in San Francisco, so hope and courage are married. And what happens with hope and courage? They have a wonderful relationship. They support one another. And hope and desire, they give birth to an idea. They do. Now, who can represent the idea? I know we have someone here that can represent an idea. Come on, Valerie. Thank you. So you're the idea. You're their offspring. So. Now, this is something that happens. We have hope, we have desire, and their child, the idea. The idea is all excited, ready to experience something new. But idea, before it can take a step forward, it has to have a conversation with self-esteem. Because you know, self-esteem is in control of whether you take a step forward or whether you take a step backward. Who has the power to represent self-esteem? Yes! Please come forward. What's your name? Marie is self-esteem. Yes. You're with the hope and the idea? Because, oh, Marie, because the idea is going to have a conversation with self-esteem. Now, when self-esteem talks to the idea, you kind of get excited because it's like, oh, yeah, good idea. That sounds wonderful. Now, while she's all excited, because idea has totally hyped her up, well, you know, there's always a little voice. You know those little voices that come in to remind you of all the things you can't do, you shouldn't do, and maybe next year you'd be good enough to do. You know. And no one in the audience has to be that negative person, since I seem to be so good at it. So your goal, remember, is to get to courage. And all of you guys are working together. But Marie, I know this is a good idea, but how could you possibly get to courage? You know, what makes you think that this idea is going to work? I mean, how many times have you been through this? Do you, you know, maybe next year would be a better time for you to move forward. You know, not now, not now. Now she's shaking her head and telling me no. Do you see that? Marie is actually telling me no. So if she's telling me no, I'm going to press more. No, Marie, you just don't understand. Because last year when you tried this, it didn't work. You know, it didn't work for your mother. It didn't work for her sister. So what makes you think it's going to work for you?
Does it work for my daughter?
Self-esteem is talking back. Did you know that? Self-esteem is talking back. What else?
And this is a true story. My daughter, she's 32 right now, and one of the things that held her back was very low self-esteem, and I couldn't believe that, you know, such a beautiful and intelligent girl that she is had low self-esteem. I just never saw it. She was always very courageous and with ideas, very, very much a social butterfly. And finally, she gave in to who she really is. She got a job, and she's just flourishing. She's just flourishing. And I encouraged her, but, you know, she had to see it for herself.
That's it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hoping you guys see here. But let's watch this journey. Remember your goal? What is your goal?
Give her the desire. Hope. I want to be courageous and build up my self-esteem so I can get over there.
Yes, that's the idea, man. She's woman. She is definitely pushing. But, you know, I'm still going to try to tug you back. Now, are you guys going to help her move forward to courage? Did you see what she did? Whoa, you guys good? Whoa. When you start, basically, she is putting me in my place. She is telling me that there is absolutely no room for the negative. But let's also talk a little bit about what she did. Candy, I was holding self-esteem very tight. Candy came and just karate chopped me, made me release her. But in that sense, she is also using creativity, because although I was holding tight, holding firm, she's thinking, okay, break that attention, interrupt that thought, start thinking and doing something different and creative. And guess what? That broke the hold. It broke the hold. When I was, you know, having my little pity party because I had to retrain myself on how to use the right side of my body. Maurice was 4 years old at the time. He wanted me to color, and that was something we used to do. But since I couldn't hold a crayon, I was extremely upset and frustrated with it.
when I started to cry, he comes up to me and pats me on the shoulder and says, Mom, don't cry. You can use my crayons. Maurice had these big, fat, giant crayons. I don't know why in the world I never thought about it before. Use the crayon to practice muscle memory in my right hand. And why not pick up a pen in my left and learn how to write with that? Creativity. My definition, slightly different than Webster. But my definition of creativity is alternative solutions are present and they are within reach. Candy karate chopped me, and look, they move forward. As a matter of fact, they move past go. Look at that. Another thing is focus. They did not simply concentrate on the negative words that I was saying. And come on, I'm not the only person here that has these thoughts when there's a great idea that comes to mind and then reminders of our inadequacies. Am I the only one? Am I kind of crazy or something? Oh, okay. Yes, it is a tug of war. But you have to, let's put this in perspective. I want you to notice, I'm the negative voice, right? How many positive voices do we see here? Are you positive?
Yes.
Are you positive?
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Definitely.
Totally.
So with all the positive in mind, why is it so often we allow the negative voice to stand out? We allow the negative voice as the one that gets more time to speak and to play in our minds. This is why when we utilize our resiliency traits together, guess what? We aren't alone. They are supported by one another. Each of them standing together. Now here is the confidence factor. Because when you have desire and hope, and they birth the idea is so persuasive with self-esteem that they're actually willing to take initiative, to take a step forward. They start feeling a little better about themselves. Instead of self-esteem being something real low, if they start building upon every success, regardless of how small it may be, then they start taking that deep breath in, holding the chest up, and confidence starts coming. The more confident they are, they start really focusing on what the goal is. You saw them way back here. And I asked, what's your goal? What's your goal? I asked more than one time because if we don't remember what our goal is, what it is that we are trying to accomplish, where we want to go, guess what? See the go sign way over there? And you see where I am? I haven't even started. Do you see the importance of moving forward, how you can take that next step? In humility, did you notice that not one of them came out saying, I'm Macho Man? No, they aren't putting themselves forward. They aren't pressing that I'm so great, I'm so wonderful. They are considering one another and working as a unit, working together. Being humble doesn't mean being a doormat. No, you're just being considerate. And guess what? It helps your whole team. It helps you move forward. But tenacity is because the more I pull on self-esteem, you're going to need a little tenacity to get through it.
It doesn't just happen automatically. My mother-in-law, Tabra Tanoa, she was born in Texas. Both of her parents were college professors. So, yes, she had to be a college professor. That was the rule. She did not want to teach, but she felt that her parents had paid so much money for college, she owed it to them. So she did not like it. After 2 years, she decided, okay, if I'm going to be a teacher, then I'm at least going to do it abroad. She taught in Costa Rica, in Spain, various countries. While she was in Spain, she took an art class. And my goodness, she couldn't stop. She loved art. She loved jewelry. But she decided that she wanted to speak with people from different villages to really get the earthy tone of the struggles that they go through. How did this stone come about? How did you get it? Why do you use it? Why is this particular piece so important? So based off of the earrings and the necklace, you kind of see what happened there. She went the jewelry route. But let me tell you, it wasn't easy. When she made her jewelry, her first job was selling it on the street on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley. Yeah, how pleasant that was. Years she did that. Years. Finally, when she sold enough, then she was able to stop selling on Telegraph, and she was actually able to get her jewelry sold in different stores. She started going to different fairs. She built a business. 2 years in a row, the Fortune 500 ranked her as one of the fastest growing businesses because it kept doubling and doubling. But she used, her employees were always people from other countries because they helped her learn, they helped her grow. But she was tenacious. People who said, you will never make a living selling jewelry. And you know those artist types. They just can't ever get it together. Proved them wrong through her tenacity. But it's in using all of the traits together. That's how you strengthen them. And that is the confidence factor. You can't, it's like working at the gym and exercising. You will not strengthen the muscles if you don't use them. Same thing with resilience. You have to use the traits. Courage, creativity, initiative, focus, insight, humility, tenacity. And I'll tell you a thing about focus. I was at my karate class. Did anyone see the promo video? You saw me in the little karate uniform? That's real. The very first time I was getting a promotion, I did the test and I felt really good about it. Well, all of a sudden they start bringing out these boards. And it's like, oh, well, that must be for the, you know, the higher ups, you know, the colored belts. Next thing I know, they're calling my name. And it's like, Karen who? I couldn't believe they were calling me. Then they said, okay, we want you to break this board. And it's, so how am I supposed to do that? Because I'm telling you, breaking boards wasn't part of the regular class. Simply not part of the class. They're holding the boards. And this instructor tells me, Karen, you have to focus. So you're focusing on one particular point. But here's the key. You don't focus on just the point. You focus through it. So many times in our lives, we think we're focused. Oh, we're excited. But guess what? We aren't. It's fuzzy. There's so much fuzz around it, and because we don't have clarity, we lose track. We are easily distracted. And because we're distracted, we don't have that focus. Let me just read you something that, of course, is in my book. This was written by William Hutchinson Murray. And it says, until one is committed, there is hesitancy. A chance to draw back. Always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitely commits itself, the providence moves too. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. I learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Thank you, ladies, for showing us the confidence factor.
Our special thanks to Karen Walker Tanoa for her comments here today at the Commonwealth Club. Again, my name is Dr. David Okla, the chairperson for the Personal Growth Forum, and I'll be moderating today's audience question period. There are some cards on your seats. Does anybody have some questions that they've filled out? Does anybody have some verbal questions that we can repeat for Karen? Yes, please.
How long was your recovery period?
It only took about a week or so to get the feeling back in my right side. However, it was almost a year before I really could manage things. And what happened is that I was not able to work anymore. And it did come to a point where I viewed myself as a flat, broke, paralyzed single parent of three. And that is because I was in real estate, and when you aren't bringing any money in, and all of the money is going out, you're using all of your savings, hospitals, therapists, it was expensive. And did I mention I was taking care of the three kids? Okay, so it came to a point where I was not able to go to physical therapy anymore. So my recovery time took a whole lot longer than it should have, simply because I did not have instruction on what I could do, what I should do to help regain my strength. It was definitely a challenging period.
Do we have any other questions right here?
Was there an event or a moment where you finally said, wait a minute, you know, I can do this, I can get through this, something, an epiphany of some sort?
You know, one of the things that happens is you fall into a rut. I was having a pity party on a regular basis, in a state where all I could do was feel sorry for myself. So it was very difficult to think of anything else. I would start reading a book and it would say, think positive. It'd be great if I could think positive long enough to get to the next page, but I couldn't. But I'll tell you, one day I walked in the kitchen. My three boys were at the table, and all they did was looked at me. And you could just see the sadness in their eyes. And in my mind, they were saying, okay, Mom, what's next? I felt if I didn't do it for me, I at least needed to provide something better for them. When I was 3 years old, my father had health issues, problems with his heart. He used to have heart attacks as often as people would change the oil in their car. I mean, every 6 months he was having a heart attack. It was horrible. The doctors did not expect him to live past adolescence.
Well, as he went through his teenage years, early manhood, he's thinking, hey, I've got it going on. Meets my mother, they get married, have 5 kids. They're thinking life is great. Well, at 36, he dies. 2 months later, my mother dies. We were all watching TV one night, and she had a really bad headache. Kevin and I were the only ones awake. Kevin's my older brother. And so he says, Kev, take care of the girls. She goes to the hospital. I did not know that that would be the last day I saw my mother. She died that night of a hemorrhage. Yes, thank you. Cerebral hemorrhage, that's what they said, yeah. I felt that my parents died, so I didn't get to grow up with them. And here I have the nerve enough to cop an attitude and be sorry for myself because I'm physically limited. I'm still alive. These babies are still here that need care. But I wanna complain? That's why I think humility is a big thing for me, because guess what? It wasn't all about me. And as soon as I put myself out of the limelight and put the needs of my kids in front, then I started looking for new ways to help. So that was my moment.
We have another question right over here. Thank you, Karen.
I love how you described the punching through the board in martial arts and how it's not just focusing on one spot in that, but focusing through that. And I'm wondering how you bring that into challenges or goals that you have now in your life, if that provides like a metaphor for you.
It does. Because, okay, I'll give you an example. My book, Getting Past Go, Finding Opportunities in a Crisis. I had a thought of doing this book years ago. It never happened. So then I sat down and I'm going to be focused. I'm going to write an hour every day. I'm focused because I want to write this book. I'm focused. Guess what? I was completely distracted by any butterfly. Oh, someone's going out. Oh, there's music playing here. Because, like that poem says, I was saying the word, but in my heart, I didn't have the commitment to be focused. The commitment, I believe, is what helps focus, tune in, and keep out the distractions. It doesn't eliminate them. They're still there. However, you are no longer focused on them. Your attention is straight. The distractions are to the side because now you're committed. So that's how I use it.
Does somebody else have a question?
Were you able to instill resilience in your young sons?
Thank you for speaking in the microphone.
I'm a parent, and I also believe that it takes a village to raise a child. I need help from everyone. In regards to my own children, yes, as a parent, I try to be the example. Not just say the words, not just say, these are the 7 traits, make sure you use them. I try to show them. So there was a point, because this was how I was taught, that if something bad is going on or something that doesn't bring me comfort, you hide that from the children. You don't let them see the bad part. You know, children shouldn't see things like that. You only show them the happy. Well, this was coming to me, and it's like,
Yeah, so then they grow up in this world where they don't understand how to deal or how to cope with challenges or adversity. We aren't giving them any skills when we shield them from life. When life says stop, we need to let them know, hey, I got a call from life today. I need some support. So, yes, I definitely try to instill these traits in my children, but by being an example, by living them, not just talking about them.
Do we have another question? Right over here. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen. What do your children do now?
Did I mention needing a village? My hopes for my children, just like these other parents in the talk that I was giving, seem to be different than what their hopes are. Totally different. But you know what? I'm going to support them anyway. All three of my boys want to be rappers. Oh, yeah. And if you can find some pants that fit that hang down right about there, oh, yeah, that's when they're doing really good. But let me tell you something. In doing the support, it's funny. If they come with me, they have to tuck their shirt in, which may be why they aren't here. But when they're out with their friends, you know, the shirt's out, the pants hanging down. But they have put together their own CDs. I mean, it's shrink-wrapped. It looks like it just came out of the store. The little barcode included. Well, hold it. This is just too funny to me. So my boys, they go and they're doing these concerts. They love just singing and dancing and on stage. Well, people wanted to know, well, how can we get more of you? Well, they saw an opportunity. So not only do they have the CDs that sell in the stores, I'm not sure if you guys have ever heard of this, but they're called bootlegs. You know, when you get something that's copied that's not supposed to be copied? Well, instead of having other people bootleg their stuff, they bootlegged it themselves. So they wanted to have a product that would fit at every price range. So there's one price for the ones that go to the store, and those who can't afford it can buy the bootleg copy that doesn't have all the pretty wrapping. On top of all of that, they took their photos. They pressed it on little hats and on shirts. They have product. So now when they're at concert, they have a ton of things to sell. Now, guess what? They're 19, 24, 27 now. They don't live with me. They don't ask me for money. So am I going to complain that my boys want to be rappers? I figure it's a success. The city suspects.
Karen, you wanted to say something? Because we've run out of questions and time.
What I wanted to say is my clients have asked for a way to remember not only the traits, but what to do with them. And I've come up with believe. So with the B, using all of the letters of the word, build courage, elevate creativity, lead initiative, intensify focus, enhance insight, value humility, and exercise tenacity. Because when just enough is not good enough, that's when it's time to believe.
Our special thanks to Karen Walker Tanoa for her comments here today. Today's presentation was called Beyond Resilience, the Confidence Factor. Let's put our hands together one more time and give Karen another applause for enlightening comments here today. We also like to thank our audience here at the club, as well as our radio audience at home. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 107th year of enlightened discussion, is now adjourned.